Hi, and welcome to the M&M Show. My name is Meze.
And my name is Simona, also called Mona. And we welcome you to our new show.
This is, we've got a friend, we bumped into just the other day, William. And we had a good chat with William. He's one of our local community artists. But also we got onto the subject of COVID and how things kind of affected individuals and families. So I hope you are listening because it's very interesting on William's story, isn't it, Mona?
Yeah, I think William wants to share something that is very emotional and very important to him on a personal level. And I think this may resonate with many other people who may have had similar experiences in their families. So anyway, this is time for a true and honest debate on what has happened during the pandemic. And if he's got the will and the courage to speak out, we are very much welcoming him. So how are you, William?
Thanks for coming along, William.
Thank you very much.
First, can we ask you something about yourself,
who you are? Background. Yeah, well, I've been in Cumbernauld for 44 years.
Wow.
Got married when I was 24, moved out here. So came from Springburn originally. Got married, moved here, as I say, like, you know, so I've been here for a long time. So come from a big family, but well known in Cumbernauld.
Yeah, same as Maisie.
Yeah, a real big family.
Big family. Mm. So yeah, I've been coming out a long time. So my brother Gordon, who is diabetic, I became his carer. So
so that's during COVID?
During COVID, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was caring when COVID broke out. I was caring probably about 3 or 4 years before that. So COVID broke out, and Gordon used to go to a podiatrist every 4 weeks, yeah, once a month. So that all shut down, all the care shut down, as you know. So well, that's fine at the time, but we went out every day. We made sure we went out every day because didn't believe in the lockdowns as such, because you had to go out for fresh air. And so I said to him, we need to go out, just move about all the time, because just can't stay in the house, you know, to just become depressed and all that kind of stuff.
So that would affect, obviously, millions of across, wasn't it? It was the same.
I made sure we went out, you know, on a daily basis. So at the start, we used to go out and, you know, maybe meet people, go down the street and say, how's things? Okay, we try to talk to people. Say, well, what about this pandemic, this virus? Do you know anybody's got COVID? No. Do you know anybody's with COVID? No, died for COVID? No.
Nobody knew.
No.
And this went on for about 4 or 5 months, for all the time we were being out. And then...
Was that still at the time of the restrictions?
Yeah, the restrictions were in. And then, you know, you bring queues for the shops, etc., etc. And all people wear masks on. And we never wore a mask any time. Gordon did it first. I said to him, that's not good for you, because you're breathing in toxins. You're supposed to be breathing out. So he eventually came around to, yeah, I won't wear it. So that was fine. So right up from March to November, nothing happened, you know. Never got the virus, never got a cold, anything like that. But because Gordon he wasn't going to a podiatrist, his feet weren't getting looked after, so I was a bit worried about that. So when November came, I could see a difference in Gordon. I said, are you okay? And he said, I'm fine. This went on for about a week or so, and eventually he says to me, I think my feet are infected. So I took him into the house and had a look at his feet, quite badly infected.
So how long before that, when was the last time then your brother actually got to see the podiatrist? It
would be March.
So that would be March, so that would be like from March till November then, so...
Probably 6 months almost.
Yeah, so that's not getting looked after.
So that was it. So right away I found a doctor, called from the health centre. His own doctor was on holiday, which was very unfortunate, because if his own doctor had been working, he'd have seen to it right away.
Mm-hmm.
Quite sure of that, because he's quite friendly with Gordon, you know, Gordon went there often to the doctors for his medication and that. So the locum doctor, he says, well, give him an antibiotic. I said, he needs seen to. Does he, an antibiotic don't be enough, he needs seen to. He says, well, no, this is Friday, we'll give him an antibiotic and bring him into the health centre on Monday. So we went with that, and over the weekend, try to clean his foot, you know,
mm-hmm,
keep it sort of dry and that kind of stuff. So on Monday I took him to the doctor's called Drum. I had to wait outside, and he went in. Back out 5 minutes later, I said to him, what happened? He said, the doctor said, he's going to give me an appointment for a diabetic nurse. I said, you're joking. He said, no. So I took him back home, and I phoned the National Health Service. limelight.
NHS 24.
So
they
get back to me, they contacted Coldrum, they say, well, the doctors took swabs, we need to wait for the results of the swabs to, you know, to see what happens.
And was the feet, was it just one foot? Was it both feet?
One foot.
Really was it swollen?
Badly swollen. Toes, big toe, you could see the poison in it almost.
Right,
like, you know.
Okay.
So it was acute, quite acute, you know. Mm-hmm. So
did it have any pain anywhere else apart from his foot?
Didn't have any pain as such. Just, you could see, you know, that this was a good, like, you know. So I started to phone up counsellors and all that kind of stuff as well, like, you know, trying to get any, you know, forward.
Some kind of help.
Nothing,
yeah.
You know. So that's gone for a week.
Wow. So the foot was untreated for how long?
6 months.
So the foot, since he observed the infection, was untreated for how long? How many days or weeks?
Last year, you mean?
Yeah, when you decided to go to the doctor for disinfected foot, how long?
How long before it gets into?
Exactly.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. On the Friday when I phoned the doctors, a week later, the following Friday, Gordon got a phone call from the Monklands Diabetic Clinic to say, come in, we'll have a look at you. Mm-hmm. So I assume, you know, the health centre must have made contact with him,
right.
Even though they'd never seen him, like, you know, but I was on the phone all the time, you know, saying, something's got to be done here. So I ran him through that Friday. And of course, I had to send him in himself. I waited outside again. As soon as he came out, I have to go to accident emergency right away. So I said, okay. But he was on medication. He said, go and take me back home first for medication. So that's what I'd done. I ran him back to Cumbernauld, to his house. But during that, he was vomiting in the car because of the...
Must have been the poison through your system.
No, I think it's more like, no excitement, but...
Right, okay.
Dread, probably.
Okay.
Going to the hospital, like,
all right.
Really?
Dread and fear. So I got back in the house, had to change his clothes, got back in the car, got the medication, and drove through to Monklands. Again, accident emergency, I couldn't get in. So I took me up to the door.
Oh, so not even you were allowed to go beyond that door to help,
no? Give him a big cuddle, saying, you know, don't worry about maybe a week or two, like, you know. I walked in, and that was the last time I seen him.
Wow.
So I was in Monklands, they put him on antibiotics right away. He's on antibiotics for 2 or 3 weeks. And they give him leech therapy, put leeches on his foot to try and
get away. I heard about the leeches to draw out the poison, stuff like that,
and that kind of stuff. So they've done that. So next thing was, and by the way, there wasn't a mention of COVID, none whatsoever, or a COVID test, nothing, all this time.
Mm-hmm.
So the next thing what happened was a surgeon came from Hayermyers to have a look at Gordon. He looked at him and says, okay, we'll transfer to Hayermyers. We'll do an operation on your foot. He said, you might lose a couple of toes. You know, you might have to cut a couple of toes off. Well, that's fine. At least you knew something was getting done, like, you know. Although it was that bad right enough, but, you know, something was starting to take effect, like, you know.
And was anybody allowed in at this point to visit?
All that time, nobody's allowed in.
Nobody?
Nope. So if you can imagine, then there, over 3 weeks yourself.
No visits, nobody. Yeah.
And how your soul would probably hit rock bottom, like, you know. And we were speaking to him on the phone, and day by day you can feel him, you can sense it, he was going down and down, like, you know. So anyway, so then he was transferred to Hayermyers, and the very morning he was to get transferred, they gave him a test for COVID, of course, positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they wrapped his foot up and put him in isolation, and I knew then when I heard that, his son had phoned me to tell me, I knew then he was going to die in hospital. I just left him. This was a week before Christmas.
Yeah, because, you know, being in isolation probably for weeks, the foot would still be untreated.
Yes.
The infection would go on, obviously. So it's like,
Well, as I say, they wrapped up the foot in isolation. And bear in mind, we don't know what medication he was getting in hospital.
No,
the protocols.
We know nothing.
The COVID protocols,
His son said to me that they were trying out a new COVID drug on him.
Maybe was it a remdesivir?
Sorry?
You think it could have been remdesivir?
No? Don't know what it was. His son is going to try and get a medical record at some point to find out what we actually got. So we don't know if it was they're getting stuff to settle him down or, you know, and we just don't know. So as soon as they put him into isolation, we didn't really hear from him. One day before Christmas, his son gets a phone call from the hospital. He says, you better come in. He's deteriorating. His organs are failing. He went in. That's the first time he's seen him. And to kind of all the kind of gear on, you know, the protective gear.
Protective. Yeah.
And then we were trying to cheer him up, like, you know, but he said...
How was he looking at this point?
He said he was shocked when he saw him. Mm-hmm. Absolutely shocked. He was emaciated, like, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So had he been getting fluids, or you don't know if he'd been getting...
Well, when he went in, he was trying to give him some water. Mm-hmm. So that was the day before Christmas. And then the 27th, he died, passed away. His only son that was there.
That's horrendous. And what did the hospital say? What was on the death certificate?
On the death certificate was COVID and sepsis.
COVID and sepsis.
Yeah.
That is absolutely amazing, isn't it, how they could put that down? That's
the sepsis was from the infection.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
What was more amazing was the funeral. We had to wait till the end of January for the funeral because at the time that's where COVID, etc.
Yeah, there was always a backlog, wasn't there?
So you got buried at Eastfield Cemetery. Of course, there was a certain amount of people allowed there. But there was a crowd of people, the UM. You played dominoes in the Borders Club and all that. A lot of people there. They were away at the side.
Standing off,
Out of the road. Mm-hmm. And the service was there to have a wee kind of, almost like a ghetto blast, or like, you know, to play a hymn, mm-hmm. like, you know.
And it's shocking.
Nobody was allowed to hold a cord or anything like that. And the grave diggers basically threw them in to the ground, and that was it.
So there was no bearers at all, it was just the couple of guys the grave diggers?
Lifted up the coffin, threw them into the ground. And at that point, I wanted to scream everybody.
Aye, that's
horrendous. I looked about everybody with their masks on, I wanted to scream at everybody. Yeah. You know, I can't say any more than that.
No, I know. It's horrendous though, because just like that, obviously many thousands as well was like that, the same. I mean, I had more experience with a couple of my cousins when they passed away, and that happened the same kind of thing. There was only 12 of us allowed to be at that time. It was a wee bit further down the road of COVID, but you were all allowed 12 people to be either in the church and to be at the graveside. And I found that always extraordinary, because it doesn't matter where you are, you're always going to be breathing. Air circulates, you know, everywhere. Yeah. So, I mean, where is it going to... It never made sense to me either, how they managed to get away with that one.
Well, the thing being that the day of his funeral, it was a horrible day. It was snowing, freezing cold in January. And then after it, you couldn't have a reception. There was no reception.
No.
So we had to get back to his house with just, like, some of the family, like, you know. And that was it. I was completely inhumane. Mm-hmm. Utterly inhumane.
Yeah.
And again, I won't say any more than that.
No, everything was inhumane at that time, because it was not about anybody else. It was just this so-called pandemic. But, you know, everybody's got their stories and what's happened to their loved ones in these times.
Yeah.
And it was shocking how the government did that to people. As you said, that inhumane word is...
Yeah.
It's probably mild. I mean, I'm sure we'd all like to call them a wee bit more than that.
But Bob Gordon's story is only one, it's only a fraction of the thousands of people, probably worse, care homes, etc. Like, you know, it's only one of very many.
Mm-hmm.
People who would listen to us will know about it, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is that. I mean, this story here will touch many thousands of people's lives as well, and what's happened to their loved ones. And we've all seen the pictures. I mean, from time to time, we've seen pictures in the papers, you know, where elderly folk in these care homes up against windows, and their families could only touch the glass or smile at them. And at the same time, after a few moments, the staff were actually taking the parents away from the windows, which I couldn't understand, that why they weren't allowing them to sit there or stand there and just still have that connection eye to eye, or even just, I found that was horrific.
Yeah, the horror show about it is there was people who participated in this compliant and all this process.
Very compliant.
But they should be speaking out, and allowed this to happen. Human beings watched people die when they could have been saved.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm quite certain if Gordon had went to Mayo, he sort of heard Myers and had his operation, he'd still be here now, like, you know.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Quite certainly, like, you know.
Definitely, there would have been many, many thousands would have been probably saved, William. But even to that, so when that happened with your brother, did you not talk to did you phone the hospital yourself, or was it just, let your nephew do that, you didn't want to overtake anything?
I was his son.
Yeah.
I didn't want to interfere too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because also at the same time, you weren't going to get anywhere, because they were going to put the shutters down, you know. They were going to cover each other up, I would say, like, you know. Because they had the protocols. I wouldn't say so much the nurses, doctors and nurses but the chief executives and the senior management, National Health Service, should face reprisals to all this, like, you know. Again, I won't say too much about it, because... Right.
I think we'll take a wee
We'll have a wee break now. All right. Hi, and welcome back to the M&M Show. I hope you all had a nice break there, listening to some nice music. And so Simone and I is back to talking to William here. And we're just talking about, obviously, the impact that affected the family after the hospitalisation of William's brother. So William, you told us that your nephew was one of the sons. So has he got other family members?
Yes, he's got a daughter up in Owness and a son in Owness as well, like, you know. So they're up there.
Okay, so I've never heard of that one. So do you want to tell, where is that? Is that in Scotland?
That's just by Inverness, like, you know.
By Inverness, right, because I've not heard of that one. So that's interesting.
Owness was a, they built kind of, you know, the rigs and all that.
Okay, the rigs up there, was it?
Kind of build that place for that, like, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right.
A lot of people moved up from the Central Belt to Owness.
To work up there. Yeah. All right, okay, that's interesting. So sorry, I interrupted you there. So you were saying the other family members came from there?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, obviously they couldn't come down because they weren't going to see him anyway. Mm-hmm.
That must have been hard for them though, wasn't it?
But when he got took into isolation, his son, Gordon, made up some videos, like, you know, and we all spoke and all that. Mm-hmm. And
so to kind of keep him his morale up and
so
things.
So when I actually got to see him, played a video. They say Gordon was lying there, played the video, and they heard everybody speaking. Mm-hmm. Just started crying, like, you know.
Oh, that would have been sad. Yeah.
And did he say, and just started crying, like, you know. In fact, he didn't know, because he said to Gordon, I think this is the end, like, you know.
That's
a shame.
Said.
That is really hard, isn't it?
So that was it.
Well, yeah, and this is it again. It's impacting on the rest of the family, and especially when it happens so quick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, that you're talking just a matter of over a couple
of weeks.
It's
a shocker. Even his friends and people at Ewan were absolutely shocked. You know
how sudden something could really go like that, isn't it? It was horrific. After that happened, did the rest of his family manage to come down? And
yeah, but they obviously come down for the funeral.
So they managed to come down. Yep, and were they allowed to attend the funeral?
Yeah, yeah, immediate family.
Right.
There's also so many allowed, as you know, but the immediate family, that was that 12, 14 people. Like,
mm-hmm. Horrific. And what did they think about it? Have you had a talk with them after it? Or?
At the time, they went along with all the stuff, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Not along with, you know,
accepted?
You know, all the kind of restrictions and et cetera, they were complying with what they were told by the so called scientists and experts, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, but now they realise the whole thing was a complete scam, complete fraud, mm-hmm. which it was. And I knew that the very day it began, when Boris Johnson stood up, I think the 19th of March, and declared the lockdowns. You know, in fact, there wasn't any lockdowns. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any lockdowns because people locked themselves down.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have walked out there. They could have walked out of their house any time they wanted. But it just gave their freedom away, you know, to some corrupt politicians, like, you know.
So they became compliant?
They were compliant, complicit. And that's why I say to the graveyard, I could have screamed. I could have screamed.
It must have been horrific. As you said, even just that notion of knowing that you couldn't even place your own brother or own family member into, you know, its last resting place. Yeah. And yet when you're actually witnessing how horrific that was.
Yeah.
For to be almost, as you say, thrown into a grave, you know?
Are you exactly what was going on? Are you where the outcome was? Mm-hmm. About the vaccines, etc., etc. Are you about all this stuff? I was trying to tell people from when it all began on the 19th of March, what was coming down the line. Like, I laughed at it, and, you know, accused, you know, your mind's all right and that kind of stuff, like, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're trying to tell people, this is what's coming. But they know now. They all know now. Even the ones that don't admit it, they all know. And 4 years on, 4 years down the line, look at us now, like, you know, the mess we're in now. Mm-hmm. You know, people can't get appointment for their cancers, etc.
It had a big impact on every resources, wasn't it?
The whole thing was to bring down basically the National Health Service, which it's almost done anyway. Like,
yeah,
you
it's
know.
Almost gone, isn't it? Then
it's almost finished, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And prepare you for the private sector, insurance stuff, like, you know. That's it.
That's getting forced out, isn't it?
That's it.
But what
people,
about Gordon's...
Sorry to interrupt you. People were sacrificed for that agenda. Gordon was one of them.
Yeah.
You know, people were sacrificed.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention the Prime Minister Boris Johnson, because I have seen a video with him affirming that there was a 97% chance of false positive with a PCR test. And I know from other sources that it all depends on the number of cycles they used in this amplification with a PCR test. So if they are around 40, everything will turn out positive. Sure. And it seems the NHS used something around 40 cycles. Well, if they are 20, nothing gets positive, you know. And the idea is that in the FDA manual of the PCR test, which I have seen, it was available on their website, it was written that this test limitation is that it doesn't differentiate between diseases, and it cannot identify the infection.
That's right.
So it was in its own manual that obviously it cannot be used for an infectious disease. So consider these two aspects and the fact that practically anybody going into the hospital with a certain condition could have turned out to be positive. But I wanted to ask you, did he display any signs of COVID? You know, the usual that the press was speaking about.
No, nothing.
I mean,
The PCR test was ace in all this agenda, because the PCR test was a virus, and the man that invented the PCR test, Carlin Bullis, died. So very conveniently, he passes away.
2019, The pandemic started off in March 2020.
Right. Carlin Bullis got presented with a Nobel Prize, I think it was for chemistry, for the PCR test. And he came out, the videos of Carlin Bullis saying, do not use this test, because you can pick up anything you like with this test. You can make it anything you want with it. And that's what they've done, because the test was supposed to be used in 30 cycles. The cycles to work out, and they were amplifying the cycles to 40, 35, 40, because if you had a cold a year ago, part of that debris would sum your body, and they would pick that up, so they could pick up anything. So that was the race card, and all this, like, you know. And that's how they pulled the whole thing off.
Yeah. And I heard as well that, I don't know if, you know, what you think, but I remember reading quite a few places that people were actually testing these on just, like, say, tops of lids, cans, their work surface, anywhere, and it was shown up as COVID.
There was the president, I think it was the president of Tanzania or something, John Magufuli, who affirmed this publicly, that they've tested all kinds of
surfaces,
animals and fruits and stuff like that, and they turn out to be positive.
Yeah.
So I think many people have seen that video with him. He died afterwards of a heart attack.
When did he die?
Died about less than a year later on, I think, of a heart attack. But the idea is that he presented this publicly, you know. And he said they don't want to test people with this. Also, even if people got COVID, it is known, especially in Romania, it's very well known. It was spoken on mainstream channels that there were hospitals in which nobody died of COVID versus hospitals in which almost everybody died of COVID. So it depended very much on the protocols they adopted, the hospitals. And there's also a famous website, which is I think c19early.com, in which you can find a lot of links to studies and statistics regarding to various protocols that doctors all over the world have applied for COVID. And you can find there that there's a number of doctors that had zero deaths in treating COVID. And there's many solutions that have been identified, and they worked very good. I mean, it wasn't just ivermectin, it was melatonin, it was even the sun, even exercising. I mean, there were so many things that worked, and there were protocols that have been given by doctors such as Dr. Peter McCullough, which were also combining several such solutions, and they were very, very much efficient, and they were used in many, many places. So even if people got COVID and they were hospitalized, they shouldn't have necessarily died of it. But with ventilators, it has been stated since 2020 that they had a rate of deaths, I mean, like 80-90%. Once they put people on ventilators, only about 10% maximum would survive, you know. So it depended very much on the protocols too, but giving a bit of attention to this particular case, if you have a person with an infection, thus risk of sepsis at any time, and it was meant to go in an emergency surgery, I mean, obviously you risk this person's life if you don't do this thing and start applying other protocols.
Well, the protocols he applied was, he tested positive for COVID, and he died within 28 days later of the COVID death. If he fell off a bridge, died, but he had a test 28 days before that, tested for COVID positive.
Yeah. It was COVID.
By COVID death, that's how he done it.
Yeah. It seemed to be the protocol for a lot of the deaths, and COVID was getting used on every death certificate. And then all of a sudden, within about 6 months, then they kind of changed the layout, wasn't it? It was maybe about 6 months.
Yeah, there was a number, but I don't remember it exactly.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
But it's very sad. It's horrific, though, but it's actually happened.
Sorry, is it, they used fear as their main weapon. And when they opened up all these Nightingale hospitals, they were never used.
Yeah.
It was the fear factor. Mm-hmm. Well, they're opening up these hospitals, this is going to be really bad. Like,
and that costs a lot of money for
it
that.
It costs a fortune, absolute
fortune. From the
and all these centres, all these COVID testing centres, mm-hmm. these private companies were all running, the amount of money that was thrown down the gutter mm-hmm. for all this. Shocking, utterly shocking. Mm-hmm. And then all these MPs were getting backhanders for their PPP.
That's right, there's a big one with that Michelle Mooney, isn't it? Because of the amount of millions
they're getting contracts,
And also they were getting contracts for people that didn't have any kind of medical knowledge or background or anything like that for to do all these protection apparatus and things. And they were getting it, you know, just like that Michelle Mooney. Now she's never had anything to do with any kind of medical facilities, and yet she won that major big money. And what happened to it? They didn't use it. Yeah. They couldn't use it. Apparently, it was all, they were useless, all the stuff.
Had the charade of the First Minister on the podium every day of the week. Every day of the week. Week in, week out. Mm-hmm. With
the update.
The so-called medical advisors.
Yeah.
You know, there's 40 people in ICU, like, you know, and three people have died of COVID today. They kept come away every day with these figures, like, you know. And they're running their element, you know. As if they were loving it, like, you know. And then we find out 4 years later, you know, they wiped away all that information in the WhatsApps, etc., etc. So we don't know who's actually giving them the information, mm-hmm. like, you know, and who's actually telling them what to do, you know.
I mean, it was in the mainstream press, wasn't it? You know, the Matt Hancock messages. When
really?
He was Matt Hancock's WhatsApp
Hancock,
messages when he was asking when are we gonna have the next COVID wave?
That's right. Yeah, there's he had many WhatsApp messages. He was talking like that, and he was having a laugh about it as well for what he was saying. But not even just him. But I mean, when you're going back to all your MPs, the way they've all been talking about it, I mean, it's again, they're all trying to, you know, bring it down, trying to say it's all misinformation, all this disinformation. So, you know, when are you allowed to speak? When are you allowed to have free speech again? So that kind of comes into it, doesn't it? You're not allowed to think for yourself, you know, what could be happening, but yet they're going to talk you down and
Event 101 a few weeks before the COVID kicked off.
So can you tell us something about it?
They say they're going to be... There's going to be a major pandemic, you know, and here's all the regulations we need to put down, etc., etc. And we must stop the misinformation.
So that was a simulation for a pandemic?
It was a simulation for the COVID.
Right.
They had it all worked out, them testing out, you know, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to quell all the kind of people that speak out about it, like, you know, amazing, utterly amazing.
No, it's horrendous. So what about your brother's family now? You said earlier there that your nephew's looking into seeing records.
Yeah, they...
So, is it getting anywhere forward
They're fairly full on board now, mm-hmm. what happened to him. So, leave up to his son. He's got his files that the hospital gave him, but I don't think he's got the medical records as such. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to try and apply and get him, like, you know.
Yeah, just to get the truth, isn't it? It's basically to get to the bottom of it because it was so sudden.
That'll be a long process mm-hmm. because I'll have to go through a long, long process to get it, because they'll put up the barricades, you know.
Aye. I mean, that's been so sad and so horrific for yous all, but also the fact that just his own kids, you know, couldn't even get to see him or really get up to that. And it's, again, going back to everybody. Everybody was more or less in the same boat in the hospitals and nursing homes. It was just inhumane. It was so cruel, the way that they treated everybody. I mean, even for adults can understand, but children. I mean, I know that my own experience, again, going back to my son, it just so happened that day that my son took my grandson into hospital because he'd taken a high fever. And that was the very day that the lockdown started, and the ambulance actually had to come and take my grandson to hospital because it was really bad. So by the time they got to the hospital and get in and sorted, they were told within, you know, I think they were there for about 4 or 5 hours, and then they had said, you know, this virus, right, we're having to lock down the hospital. And they gave my son the chance to take either medication, antibiotics, and they'd already seen him, so they were almost kind of deciding what they were going to do, whether they were going to keep my grandson in or let him back out. But it just so happened that they said, well, look, one of the doctors says, look, we'll just give you some medicine, take it home and just give him sponge baths, because that's what we used to do when all ours was having high temperatures. The first thing we always done was put them in, like, either in salt baths,
yeah,
and or else cool sponges if they couldn't go in the bath. But so that's what he did. He just came home because they said, well, we're going to have to lock the hospital down and we might not be able to open up over the weekend and things like that. So so just by chance that happened. So you think about the amount of children as well that, and this is, they seem to forget about that, was the kids that actually get affected too, because they weren't allowed to see any of their families. The only ones that was maybe in there at the time, maybe their mums or dads or whatever, they were the only ones that was there. There was nobody else allowed to come in and see. So if there was a wee kid that was there himself or there themselves,
yeah,
no parents were allowed in. That's horrific.
COVID was a psychological operation. Destroyed people's minds, basically. You know? That's what it was really about. And for other reasons, I can't.
You would like to say, but
like
you're
not. I can't, like, you know. The reason I'm saying this to you today is because if people outside are listening to this thing, you know, sort of going overboard, etc., etc., and people are going to, like, in Tenerife and Benidorm, you know, twice a year, I think it's hunky dory, it's okay. Well, they're coming back big time. If we don't stand up to this and bring justice for these people, they're going to come back big time and hit us again, like, you know. So that's what people got to think about.
And do you see something else going to be in the, you're talking about something's coming down the line again, so you believe there's something else that's going to start?
They're preparing for the next pandemic. They're telling this to your face, like, you know. They're preparing for it. They're going to set up, like, you know. This will come. It's all a matter of time. And once the World Health Organization gets that treaty in place where they're attempting to bring out all governments, will come under the World Health Organization, and they can dictate to all governments what to do. No, create lockdowns, you know, vaccinate everybody. Does it matter whether you want it, you don't want it, like, you know, this is what's coming down the line. So people need to be aware and need to start sitting up, take notice.
That's the World Health Organization.
Start opening their mouths for their children and their grandchildren, because if they don't, they're in big trouble.
Have you been speaking with healthcare professionals about these issues and what you believe happened during COVID or what will come next? Did you have a feedback from a professional?
From health professionals?
Yeah.
Well, what I deal with, homeopaths, like, you know, and then the person I deal with, he knows, like, you know.
So you see that, a homeopath?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. And he knows what's going on?
Yeah.
Does he? Yeah.
In fact, every homeopath, at the beginning of the pandemic, so-called pandemic, was sent a letter from the health authorities stating they weren't allowed to say that they could treat COVID and say anything against it, against what they were medicating people with, etc. Like, you know, they were told to shut their mouth, basically, or they'd be struck off. Like, you know.
Like a gag order.
Every.
So that was a gag order they were given as well?
Right.
Wasn't it?
Gagging order.
Right. Yeah. And were they given a choice of what they could use for? Were they limited to what they could use as for being homeopaths?
Well, they had to come under the regulations as well. If they've seen a patient, they had to scrub their room out, etc., like, you know, that kind of stuff, like, you know.
But was there any, let's say, ingredients or anything like that? Was there anything that they weren't allowed to use? You know how, let's say, at one point they were told, major doctors were told not to use ivermectin or...
They couldn't give advice on it.
They couldn't, right, okay.
They weren't allowed to give advice on it, put it that way.
Aye, it's horrific because it really attacked everybody, didn't it, in every health profession.
But do you know a person, for example, from the NHS who would stand by your opinion?
Is there anybody that you know or you've spoken to?
A doctor or a nurse? Or?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. After Gordon died, somebody told me about exercise classes up in the Trice for sore backs, because myself being a joiner, so I was kind of shaky back, what it worked like, you know. So they had it for a free run, like, you know, so you could apply for it, but hitting a doctor's line for it. So I said, okay, I'll phone up a doctor, you know, and, you know, ask him to give me a line so I can join this club, like, you know. So I phoned up and they said they're going to give me an appointment with Gordon's doctor, right? I won't say his name.
No.
Yeah.
So such and such a day. So I went that day, so went to reception. Said, I've just seen doctor. Oh no, it's other doctor, like, you know. I said, is this doctor? No, this is the doctor you have to see. So what happened there was they were going in there, ask questions, like, you know, don't bring him in here, so they gained a separate doctor.
Oh, right, okay.
That's my opinion on it, mm-hmm. like, you know. Right.
Because that never happens any other time anyway.
I know, but anyway, so I went in to see this doctor, and then it's given a bit kind of form to join this thing for the exercise class. So I started saying a bit about my brother. I started spouting out what could have happened to him, like, you know. She put her head down, didn't look at me, stayed silent, and went on and on. And I just shut up. She never said a word.
Wow. No comment.
No comment.
Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe she didn't want to engage in that conversation?
Exactly. Or... Didn't want to answer any questions. Mm-hmm. Didn't ask her questions. I just went through the process and what happened. Like,
it was more or less like a conversation, wasn't it? Just what happened. Yeah, but obviously she's felt.
She didn't counter any of your arguments.
No, obviously. I just put her head down. Okay, thank you very much. Like,
Oh, so sad, isn't it? Really,
that's
it's horrendous.
A sad story. Yeah.
It really is.
But anyway, as you said, there is the time and the place for a debate, or not this debate, you know.
The days I've done that, I wasn't going to get any satisfaction. The satisfaction I got was just wanted her to know that I knew what was going on, what really happened, like, you know. I just wanted her to know, like, you know.
That's sad, isn't it?
Well, anyway, I think...
So is that us coming up to our time? Will we have a little break for... We'll go for a little break now and just... That's time for a wee song now, isn't it?
I think it's the end.
It's the end of the show. All right. Thanks, William, for coming along and giving us your story and what's happened which was a horrific time for you and the family.
Thank you for taking the time to come and listen to me.
Thank you.
Do you have a last couple of words for our listeners?
Last couple of words.
Keep it clean. We've got to be clean.
Well, I'd like to say to listeners, the information's all out there for people. The information's all there if they want to see what really happened, what really went on. And if their children and grandchildren, as I said before, look at that information and come to your own conclusions, and maybe we can make a difference for the future. Out of all this, the children are the real target. Older people like me and my generation are not really who they're focused on. They're focused on the children for the Great Reset, to re-educate the children, to take their knowledge that we have of them, so that they don't have any reference points of the knowledge that we have of any kind of freedom that we may have had. So they want to target the children, re-educate them, program them for the reset. It's important that mothers and fathers recognise this and can see what's going on with the schools and everything that's going on with children, what they're trying to educate them with. So need to bear a lot of focus on this.
I think you're actually right there, Ryan. Before we run off as well, it's a case of it is focusing on the children, doesn't it? When you see, like, the indoctrination you mentioned about the even the sex education, things like that, and even everything that's going on. It does seem to be really focusing on the children's lives and how they can be manipulated. And the freedom that we had as young adults and children and growing up now, our kids and great-grandkids, they're not going to have that kind of freedom in the future. So I do kind of see that coming as well, William. But listen, anyway, all I can say is thanks very much, William, for joining us and giving us what's happened to your family. And it's been so tragic. And all I can say from everyone out there, I hope you have a lovely day. And thanks for joining us on the M&M show from Maisie here and my good colleague,
Simona.
Hi, Mona. Okay, guys, have a lovely day and we'll speak to you all next week. Take care.